Okay, wow. So aren't these the whole Parshios, like Vayeshev through Vayechi, is very like emotional, no? With Yosef, it's every... These are incredible, what happened with Yosef and the brothers. I don't know. Unbelievable stories. Okay, so now the pasuk that the Ramban is commenting on is the first time their brothers come to him to get food. And it says, Vayeskor Yosef esa chalamos asher chalam lahem. Yeah. And there's two extras in case anybody comes here. W will be third of these. Okay? And it says he remembered the dreams that he had. And then what does it say after that? And he says, Miraglumatem. Okay? So what's the pshat? First of all, why was Yosef doing this? Why was he accusing the brothers falsely? I mean, he knew it was falsely, being Miraglum. And what's the connection with that and the Chalamos? So says Ramban, Vayeda sheniskaimu. So Rashi says, what does it mean that Yosef remembered the dreams? It means he saw his brothers coming. They were bowing down to him. He says, oh, this is finally, the dream's been fulfilled. The time has now come. And the Ramban says the exact opposite. When he saw his brothers bowing down to him, he remembered the dreams. He remembered, this reminds me of that dream, but it's not really like it was in my dream. In my dream, there are more people bowing down to me. So it's reminding him, but it's not really fulfilling it. He knew the explanation of his dream was that all the brothers, all of them, including Binyamin, were supposed to bow down to him. It means all the 11 others. Right, the sun, moon, 11 stars. So it's supposed to be all the brothers, and the second year is supposed to be the brothers and his father and a wife. He thought of this scheme, but not a scheme in a negative way. He thought of this plan to falsely accuse them, in order that they would bring Binyamin, their brother, in order to first fulfill the first dream. So what's Ramban saying? Ramban's saying that Yosef saw the 10 brothers and he's like, okay, I know I had this dream. I'm almost positive the dream was prophetic, so I have to do something to arrange this dream's going to be fulfilled. So it's like, well, I'm missing one brother. So now I have to somehow make a scheme. It's all like on the fly. You know, he sees the brothers. It's all happening at those split seconds. I got to figure out a way to bring Binyamin down here also. How am I going to do that without first blowing my cover? I don't know why. I guess he didn't want them to bow down to him if they knew he was Yosef. I'm not exactly sure. Exactly. But so I have to make them somehow bring Binyamin down, and they're not going to want to do this. So I have to accuse them of being spies and take one of them. And so they'll have to bring Binyamin to prove that they're not. And he thought of all this plan on the spot. Okay, that was the plan. He didn't want to say at that moment, I'm Yosef, your brothers. He didn't want to do the whole thing he did the second time when Binyamin came. Quickly get my father, take the wagons full of food and bring everybody down to Mitzrayim. Of course, if he had just told them, I'm Yosef, send for Yaakov Avinu, so he would have come down immediately. So again, there's something a little bit missing here. What would have been the problem of him telling them that I'm Yosef and then bowing down to him there? Like when they're knowing that it's Yosef. I'm not sure. I think maybe he understood from the dream that they have to be bowing down to him as some sort of foreign leader, as some sort of leader, and they have to be doing it without realizing. I don't know exactly. But somehow he understood that part of the dream was they'll bow down to him without realizing that he's Yosef. After they already fulfilled the dream, the first dream, he's able to tell them, and then they can come and back, and then they'll fulfill the second dream. If not for the fact that he was doing this in order to arrange the fulfillment of the dream, this would have been a terrible sin. Right, to have his father be in mourning. And just in a state of total sadness for so much time on him, of course, but also on Shimon, which he took and he was holding as a pawn in order to bring back Binyamin. Even he was doing it in order to somewhat punish his brothers, to make them feel bad for what they had done. How can you not feel bad for his? How can you not have mercy for his elderly father? He was doing everything properly in his right time. He was doing everything with a very thought out plan. To fulfill the dreams, because he knew that they would be certainly fulfilled. Okay, before we continue, this line is what I want to focus on when we get to the end of the Ramban, but the idea that he has to orchestrate the fulfillment of the dreams, because he knew they would certainly be fulfilled. If he knew they would certainly be fulfilled, so just why did he have to do this? What's the Ramban getting at? He knew they would definitely, it was an MS dream, it was a Nevuah dream. So why does he have to do this whole scheme? Just leave it into Hashem's hands. Okay, that's what I want to focus on. But we'll continue in the Ramban. Gam anyan hasheni shaslem begavia, and when he falsely accused, he planted this gavia in Binyamin. Lo shetihye kavanoso litzaram. Again, what was going on? So the brothers, including Binyamin, came down to Mitzrayim. They bowed down to Yosef. Boom, the first dream is fulfilled. Okay, and then they're about to go back to Mitzrayim. They go back to Canaan. Sorry. So he wants them to bring Yaakov down. So what's he doing with the idea of planting the gavia on Binyamin in order to orchestrate that way they can bring Yaakov down? Okay. He was afraid that if he just says, "Bring me your father," or I don't know, something like that. I'm gonna hold your. I think what he's saying is, if he just would have told him straight out, "I want you to bring your father here because I want to make sure that your story is really true," I mean, he would have taken Binyamin and held them back. He would have thought that maybe they were jealous of Binyamin, like they were jealous of him because of their father's love for him. Oshama hirgish Binyamin shayadam bi Yosef. And maybe he thought that Binyamin would have felt that the brothers didn't care for him because they were the ones who had attacked Yosef. He thought maybe there was some sort of antagonism, some sort of issues between Binyamin and the rest of the brothers. So he was afraid to send Binyamin with the rest of the brothers to go bring Yaakov down. He had to say, because he was afraid maybe they would attack Binyamin like they had attacked him. Until he was comfortable knowing that they really loved him from the fact that they proved it by trying to fight on his behalf. Okay. And that was the idea of holding Binyamin back so they wouldn't get in a fight with him along the way. They wouldn't be antagonistic to him. But that's what Chazal have in mind in the Medrash. Amar bichia bar Abba, kol advarim sha'ata kore shediber Yehuda b'fnei achiv ad sha'ata magia v'leachol Yosef b'yisapik. Everything that Yehuda says in front of the brothers, I'm trying to remember, was Yehuda the one who said in this parsha that it's all because of what we did to Yosef? I think so, if they look back at the psukim. And until Yosef finally couldn't hold it back, hayeba pius li Yosef or pius le'echav. It was, how do you say pius? It was appeasement. There you go. Yeah, there you go. Onomatopoeia. It was an appeasement for Yosef and an appeasement for his brothers. Pius le Binyamin, pius le Yosef. Everybody that Yosef saw that they cared. The brothers also felt bad themselves. Binyamin realized that the brothers cared. Everybody was like kind of now finally the everybody's being appeased for. Ra'ech noset nafsho al banei shel Rachel. Right? It says by Yosef because Yosef saw how much the brothers cared for Binyamin. V'chinanim omer shegol ha'anyonim ha'ila hayu biYosef michachmaso bipisron chalmos. Everything he had done in this parsha, which is very surprising, how he was acting towards his brothers, it was all part of his. It was all done with wisdom to fulfill the dreams. He was there for years and years and years. He was an officer, he was a leader of a base sar gadol b'Mitzrayim, in the house of this great officer. I guess even before he went to jail originally, but certainly after he became the Mishnah LeMelech. How could he not have sent one letter to his father to say, "Listen, I'm here, I'm okay"? It's less than a week's travel. Even if it was a world away, it would have been appropriate to send some sort of message to his father. And he would, I'm not sure, is he quoting a pasuk? Anybody with is this like a quote from a pasuk? But
a stylistic paraphrase,
okay? That the redemption of his soul would be precious to his father. He would have redeemed him for a lot of money. I mean, why didn't he send to his father? He knew that this whole idea of the brothers bowing down to him could not be done in Eretz Canaan. I don't know why. But somehow this has to be part of the dream. He sensed that the message of the dream was they're going to come to him in some sort of foreign land and he'll be the leader and they're going to bow down to him. He hoped and he expected that would be done in Mitzrayim. He came down to Mitzrayim as his Eved, and little by little he's becoming prominent, and he gets thrown into jail, but then he becomes prominent again. He realizes it's all part of the plan of Hashem, that this, he should become a leader there and the brothers should come and bow down to him. And certainly after you heard the dream of Paro being in this week's Parsha and he knew he was going to be brought to a position of authority, he knew this is going to be fulfilled in Mitzrayim, and therefore I just have to wait for the right time and do what I can to hasten its fulfillment. But it's all going to come. It's all going to happen. Okay, really interesting Ramban. There's a lot of issues here that there's other perspectives on. Why did Yosef not send a letter? What was he doing to his brothers? We're not going to focus on all that because we don't have time. But what I want to focus on is the idea that Yosef knew that the dream was a nevuah. It was a prophetic dream, and still he has to orchestrate its fulfillment. Okay, so it's interesting. And this reminded me, I don't know if I'm being a little bit making interesting connections that don't really exist, but it reminded me of a passage from really Lonely Man of Faith. Has anybody read Lonely Man of Faith? Nobody. Okay, so this is a good thing to read at some point in your life. It's very interesting. Okay, the gist of Lonely Man of Faith is that Rav Soloveitchik looks at Prakim Aleph and Prakim Beis of Sefer Bereishis, which describe the creation of the world, the creation of man, and he highlights various differences between how the description of man is described, the creation of man and his place in the world, and he develops the idea that the two Prakim are describing two aspects of humanity. Okay, the first aspect, which is Adam 1, he's Adam of Perak Aleph, he's the one. Again, I haven't reread this in a few years, so I'm paraphrasing, but also probably not super accurate because I haven't done Chazar in a little while. But Adam the first, Adam from Perak Aleph, he's the one who's put Umalas Arsechip Shua. He's there to be. He's the pinnacle of all of creation. Everything less sophisticated was created first, and he's coming, and he's supposed to dominate everything. He's supposed to lead. He's supposed to organize. He's supposed to manage the world. He's supposed to be the one who's creative and makes new inventions and is able to somehow make sense out of the world, to develop it further, to make it a better place. Okay, and then you have the second parak of Adam, the Adam 2, Adam from Parak Beis, and there his role is more to be a mitzubeh. He's getting commandments from Hashem. He's somebody who's developing himself by fulfillment of mitzvos, by somehow sacrificing his own needs for Hashem's needs, by getting close to Hashem. So you have these two patterns or two models of Adam, one who's somehow fulfilling his role in the world by developing, by becoming dignified, by becoming somebody who can dominate and organize. And you have also Adam Sheni, whose role is to be humble, is to be accepting, is to be sacrificing for the sake of Hashem. Okay, so it says here, Adam the first on the other side of the sheet. Hence, Adam the first is aggressive, bold, and victory-minded. His motto is success, triumph over the cosmic forces. He engages in creative work, trying to imitate his maker, imitatio dei. Right? He's trying to imitate the ways of Hashem. We're not going to go through that. Let's go to the next paragraph. Adam the first is not only a creative theoretician. He's not only there to figure out how the world works and make models of it through math and through science. He's also a creative aesthete. He's somebody who likes beauty. He fashions ideas with his mind, with beauty, and beauty with his heart. He enjoys both his intellectual and his aesthetic creativity and takes pride in it. He also displays creativity in the world of the norm. He legislates for himself norms and laws because a dignified existence is an orderly one. He's trying to make Seder for the society, for the world, right? Anarchy and dignity are mutually exclusive. He is this worldly minded, finitude oriented. He's looking at this world here and now, beauty centered. Adam the first is always an aesthete. He's trying to make things very beautiful, orderly, you know, sophisticated. Okay. In doing this, I'm going to this paragraph. All this, Adam the first is trying to carry out the mandate entrusted him by his maker, who at dawn of the sixth mysterious day of creation addressed himself to man and summoned him to fill the earth and subdue it. It is God who decreed the story of Adam the first, that the story of Adam the first be the great saga of freedom of man slaves who gradually transforms himself into man master. Okay, that he's supposed to be somebody in the world that he's a slave to all the rules of the weather, all the rules of nature. You have these wild animals around him, the rule of bacteria that's making him sick. He's supposed to come and become a master over that, to dominate it, to organize it, to make it better. While pursuing this goal, driven by an urge which he cannot but obey, Adam the first transcends the limits of the reasonable and probable and ventures into the open spaces of a boundless universe. Even this longing for vastness, you don't have the hemshech, no matter how adventurous and fantastic, is legitimate. Man reaching for the distant stars is acting in harmony with his nature, which created, willed, and directed by his maker. It is a manifestation of obedience rather than rebellion against God. Meaning, Hashem made Adam to be like him. What is Hashem? Hashem is the creator of the world. Hashem is somebody who made. And so our job is to make the world a better place, to create new ideas, to create new inventions, to be able to somehow make things safer and healthier and better for ourselves. Okay, our job in this world is to be creative, is to make things, is to use our intellect to be make the world a better place. Okay, and I said to the footnote here, this at page 87, which I didn't give to you either, but it's really the, right? The doctrine of faith in God's charity, bitachon, right, the idea of bitachon, is not to be equated with the folly of the mystical doctrine of quietism. It doesn't mean you're supposed to be passive. Right, which in its extreme form exempts man from his duty of attending to his own needs and lets him wait in holy idleness and indifference for God's intervention. Right, bitachon in its extreme could mean I don't do anything. Hashem will provide and Hashem will organize, Hashem will arrange the world. That's not our attitude. Our attitude is we have to take the reins to make the world a better place, a holier place. This kind of repose is wholly contrary to the repose which the halacha recommends. The one which follows human effort and remedial action is supposed to act and do. Man must first use his own skill and try to help himself as much as possible. Then, only then, man may find repose and quietude, like quiet and dependence in God, and be confident that his effort and action will be crowned with success. The initiative, says the halacha, belongs to man. The successful realization to God. So what's Rav Soloveitchik saying in all this? Again, you have to read the whole essay to see what, and this is only one aspect of humanity. There's the other aspect of humanity, Adam the second. One of the aspects of us is that we're supposed to do. Hashem expects us to make this world a better place. Hashem expects us not to sit down and say, you know, when the time comes to build Eretz Yisrael, so Hashem will make it happen. Right? They say that the Botamide Habesh, Tamide Hagra, in the late 1700s, the Gra said, you know, that now the time has come. Now it's the right time for people to come and build Eretz Yisrael. Where Hashem is waiting for us to take that first step. We're supposed to start to make the world a better place, both in Chol and in Kodesh. We're supposed to make the world a healthier, more organized, more successful world, and also a better, holier, more Kodesh world. That's our job in this world. And so for the idea of this Ramban, that somehow Yosef knew, what is the lashon of the Ramban? Ki yeda sheyiskaimu be'emes. These dreams will absolutely be fulfilled. So what was he doing all this for? Because he wanted to be part of that process. Yosef knew that if his brothers are supposed to bow down to him, that'll happen one way or another. So why was he doing this? Why was he telling them you're spies and trying to bring down Binyamin and trying to bring down Yaakov? Because he knew that Hashem wants us to be part of his plan. That's part of our job in this world, is to be a shutuf. Is to use our abilities he's given us to make the world a better place and a more kadosh and a more organized, just better place. That's part of our mission in this world. Not just be passive our entire lives. This fits in with a lot of Rambans, I think, which is not time to fully develop, but there's the idea of the Ramban of by the Teva of Ein Somchen Al Hanes. Somehow, even if our efforts are not realistically going to be successful to make a Teva that will contain all the animals, Hashem says, do a little bit and I'll take over from there. There's the idea of the Ramban also he develops in a different place, that you have a lot of ideas in Nevi'im of them doing a symbolic physical action. Like they'll say, I forget who the parties in this Nevuah were, but there's a Nevuah maybe it was with Shaul, that he was crying to maybe to Shmuel that his malchus was going to be taken away. So Shaul grabs Shmuel's cloak and it tears, and Shmuel says, just like the cloak is torn, so too your malchus will be torn away from you. And you see this again and again and again in Nevi'im, Yecheskel is like the whole sefer. They do symbolic acts to represent the Nevuah. So it's a Ramban because there's some sort of idea that when an act is being done in the physical world, that has influence in the spiritual world. Not that that's really doing it, but again, we do this beginning, and Hashem is our shutuf kaviyachal and does the rest. We have to do some sort of physical action, and then Hashem helps make it successful. I think maybe that's what the Ramban is getting at here. The idea that Yosef knew I have to do something to fulfill the dream because I know it's a true dream. So therefore, it's going to be fulfilled. I want to be part of that process. And the idea, tying it back down, even though our time is up, to Hanukkah, but the idea that from a realistic point of view, the war against the Yevanim was not, it was absurd, it was irrational. The idea that this little tiny band, like this tribal band of the Hashmonaim, is going to come and fight the Greek army and be successful doesn't make any sense. It's impossible. But the idea that, listen, we have to do what we can do, Reb Dessler develops this idea. We do what we can do. We can't just throw up our hands and do nothing because we know we can't just leave the base of Mikdash in a state of shambles and a state of tumult. We do what we think we can possibly reasonably do and then put in Hashem's hand to make it successful if that's what he so wants to do. And that's the idea of we have to do what we can. We have to do and try to make the world a better place and a more kadosh, better place, and hope that Hashem will make our efforts successful. And just tying it in, Lamaisa with the Salacha, it's supposed to be Hilchos Chanukah and Hilchos Lanaka, in case anybody was wondering on the sheet. In Simon Tafresh Ayin Sifbeis in the Ramah, that's what he says. There's no idea of we don't have a chiv of a Seuda in Chanukah. But if somebody wants to have a Seuda, And then they sing Shiros v'Sishpachos. They sing praise to Hashem. Rabbi Boisudos says the Shulchan Aruch. Shemar Mem Sudos Chavrushus. Right? Hem Sudos Arushus. It's not an obligation. It's not a mitzvah. Shlo Kavim LeMishta V'Simchas. That's Ramah. V'Yish Om Shish Chsas Mitzvah Rabbi Boisudos. Da 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 da. V'Noagim Lomar Zmiros v'Shpachos V'Sudos Shemar Mem Behem V'Oz Havik Sudos Mitzvah. Our minhag is we have a suda, but then we sing songs. We sing Divrei Torah. We say Divrei Torah, and that makes it into Sudos Mitzvah. I think it's very apt that on Chanukah the idea maybe represents the Chag of our Hishtadlus is that we can actually turn any Seuda into a Seuda Smitzvah, into a Seuda of Kedusha by focusing our energies to Zmiros and to Divrei Torah, and actually maybe the message of Chanukah. Okay, I can.